This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. You have a multitude of insurance needs. They handle them all, and they do everything they can to save you money. Customer service means everything to them. And don't forget about the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, Wednesday, August 7th, Susquehanna Valley Country Club, to benefit the Susquehanna Valley United Way. Looking forward to that very much. We will be out there for that as the Purdy's continue to give back to the community. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. All right, it's Tuesdays. Time now for Tuesdays with Neil. Sir, welcome.
Always is my pleasure to be here. I hope you guys are doing as well as I am.
Well, let's start with this. We are into the spring session of the NFL, and now there are rumblings that the players do not want to do any more spring sessions but have a longer training camp. What is your thought on that?
You know, I remember when the OTA concept became, what do we want to say, finalized, like when they hammered it out. I always kind of thought it was more like set up checkpoints for the players to have to come check in more so than actually do anything. And a lot of that was, and people within the league say this, it's to put eyes on the players, to kind of make sure they can't go run hog wild for too long, and in that, make sure they're in shape, make sure that their weight still looks about what they would want it to be. A lot of things that are not exactly collectively bargained. And in that, the union has been looking to have this done for a while now. This isn't really new. It's funny because it came out of nowhere today. I didn't even realize that they were negotiating it. But if you look at it logically, here's what the players ultimately would like. Push back when we have to come back to do football stuff. Don't have a gap between OTAs and training camp. It's about 6 weeks that goes into it there. Mm-hmm. Just give us the entire time off. We'll show up at, I haven't seen exact dates of when they were mentioning, but probably mid to late-ish June. Have us do all the stuff then go into training camp. And to me, it makes the most sense. It's the most logical way from a physical perspective. It's better for a player doing all the things, kind of, you know, work themselves back into football shape. At that point, if that's even such a thing that can be done anymore, I feel like you pretty much have to be conditioned 12 months out of the year. But have it lead into camp as opposed to let's do these voluntary things that we show up for and then take off for another 6 weeks after that. From a financial perspective, I think you'd probably get more attendance. There's not a gap in between it. A lot of it is per diem, and just to dive into that quickly, the players get X amount of dollars per day to show up to these things. I know that it's voluntary, but their teams are still obligated to pay them a per diem for being there. And the smart players show up because it's money, and why would you want to reject that? If that leads right into training camp, then there's a certain level of continuity I think that makes sense. They can just stay in town and, you know, kind of do it all at once and have your body at, you know, it's most ready to jump right into camp, which is where things really count. So in this proposal, what they're basically saying is just to have all the voluntary stuff right leading up into camp. Then most places have their facility is the host of their training camp anyway. So they're all there. They're used to being there. They're used to being together. That level of continuity, I think, is beneficial for an athlete. And in that, it honestly would make the most sense. I don't really know from an ownership perspective why they wouldn't want to do it for any reason that they can publicly discuss. They would like to have it earlier just, again, to get a look at players, especially right after the draft, to know who they have, to know what type of shape that they're in, and get a sense of how what they're going to be facing come training camp. It's probably something the owners will have to get rid of, have to let go of eventually. But in this case, I think it makes the most sense just to start all of it. And it's not too far away from a time that they used to basically do it like that. But it's probably best all around just to have it start late June or mid to late June, whenever that exact date is, and have it run into training camp just for the sake of keeping everybody together, keeping the unit together. It'd be a lot easier than just, you know, having them come back and then setting them loose for six more weeks.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're a veteran, I don't think, you know, tack on another week to the front of training camp, fine. I mean, I'm fine with OTAs, though, for the free agents and rookies, just so they know who they have and who, like, actually take a minute and see which ones they actually want to bring to camp. Now, that's a different proposition to me.
Yeah, exactly. You need as much time as you can to evaluate everything, or at least they're convinced that that's the way it needs to be. It's important to remember, too, though, that we're still talking about OTAs. They're not, you know, this isn't like pre-training camp in the sense that they're going to go out and do contact drills and everything like that. It's still going to be the OTAs as we know them, except the dates are just changed. They're still voluntary. They're not able to change that within the CBA, and certainly the players aren't lobbying for tacking on a month to training camp. I'm sure the owners would love that. It has nothing to do with the scheduling. It's not going to be preseason games or anything like that. It's just not having OTAs starting right around Memorial Day and having them go through a good chunk of June before, you know, kind of releasing them for what's left of the summer. You put it all together, I think you have the best mix of evaluation opportunities when you're allowed to evaluate. Granted, don't use the word evaluate. They're not really allowed to do that. But put it into context, as Mike Tomlin would say, it gives them an opportunity to let the players know what they're going to be doing come training camp. Right. They're not evaluating them on the drills, but they are showing them how to do the drills, what the schedule will be like, getting used to what the coaches are telling them to do, the things that they're focusing on. It makes sense. You know, it's kind of a live work study. It gives them a chance to prepare themselves. I feel, though, that type of preparation would be best, you know, to get a sense of it going into camp, but then to go off 6 weeks on your own, I don't think they're in a better position because of that. They may as well just take it while it's fresh in their mind, go straight into camp, and then dig into the playbook, put on the pad, start getting actual coaching and be evaluated physically and mentally for you know, your validity and or to your value of being on that year's team. That's just me from a management perspective. I feel that that makes more sense. I'm curious to hear if teams have any specific pushback to it, what their argument would be.
Well, this is where, again, let's think the way the NFL thinks, management size of it. So let's do that for a moment. All right. You know what? End of the season until training camp. And we'll only expand training camp by a week. But we want the 18th game.
I don't think you look at it like this. I think people tend to think it's always a binary situation. It's always yes versus no. I think to some degree in would be wise to accept, if nothing else, next collective bargaining agreement. The 18th game is probably going to be the NFL's priority.
Yes, it is.
If they're going to want that, they behoove membership of the NFLPA to get something in return for it.
Yep.
If they flat don't want to do it, okay. But to be honest, I don't think they flat don't want to do it. I think that they want to get something significant for it, and they should. Mm-hmm. They only make sense, right? This is why revenue is split on an overall percentage. So if there are more games, logically, mm-hmm. that money is going to filter back down to the players. They're not going to get a flat rate for the extra game. That's something that'll work itself out the same way it did when 17 games were there. What do the players want collectively? What do they want as a group that would justify the inclusion of the 17th game? Now, I know you and I have had this conversation a bunch, but it's just amazing to me how much more leverage ownership has in this negotiation, because while probably the average generation of players in the NFL is 3 years, give or take. That's about the average length of a career. So you're changing over a team pretty much entirely once every 3 years. I think that's fair to say 90%+ of your roster is different every 3 years. Those players go out of the league just as often as they go anywhere else. And depending on the circumstances, some are still members of the union, and I don't know why they'd want to do that. If they're continuing their career, they want to be. They're paying dues on it. But in those pockets, those generations of players, priorities are completely different.
Yeah, that's right.
Different things for different people. This is how the NFL got the last CBA to go through with little to no resistance. What they did was offer a massive increase at the minimum level of salary to something that you might argue is closer to, relatively speaking, living wages in comparison to other sports, in comparison to, relative to the violence in which they are inflicting and taking on in their lives. It went up from, I believe, $325 at the absolute bargain basement level to $750 now, in exchange for essentially signing off critical health care issues and adding another game to the schedule. Now, players in off the top of my head, two that I can remember being outwardly against this, Aaron Rodgers, and at the time when he was playing, J.J. Watt.
Right.
These are two players back then that were making $25 million a year. Joe practice squad running back isn't J.J. Watt. He doesn't have that kind of money coming in. But if he's only going to play for 3 years, he's only going to get paid $325,000 for each of those 3 years. He'd love to have $750 instead of $325. Guess where he's going to vote?
Right.
If they play another game or not, he's not even going to be on the team. He's going to be a fringe, put him on the roster. It doesn't make a difference if he plays in the game or not. He's probably inactive. So the NFL shrewdly took probably a third of the league and said, we're going to pay you a lot more money. The issues that we want have nothing to do with you. May as well take it. So if you're the players now, you're remembering that. What are you able to come up with that would get you to want that extra game added? Because I remember you and I talking about this back then. They didn't add one game because they wanted one game. They want two.
Right.
They could get one right now. The next one is when they're going to go get the other one. So now they've not overplayed their hand, but it's pretty obvious what the league is going to want in the next round of negotiations. What do the players want back? What are they going to request? And I think shortening training camp, the reduction of preseason games was a part of it. Maybe they do that again. I don't know, but I would hope, for the sake of the players, their leadership is looking for a larger, chunk of something along with more revenue. Of course, they're going to want more revenue. That's always what the conversation's about, but they're going to need something else. Maybe this is sort of a good faith test. Are you willing to do something that just simply makes sense? It eliminates a lot of the problems that wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We know you're doing, but you're not going to admit it. Don't evaluate us before it's time to evaluate us. Get rid of this. Make it make sense. and you know we'll continue to discuss with you an 18th game. But until then, you know, we hope that you've got a little bit more than what you had last time, because you're not going to give the bottom class of the NFL 100% mm-hmm. raise again.
So one, you eliminate OTAs, no spring work. You add 1 week to training camp as a compensation for no OTAs. You reduce the number of preseason games to two and limit to one scrimmage that you can have in camp. You then go to the 18th game, and whatever revenue that comes out of adding an 18th game, you get 49% of that to be distributed. Oh, and by the way, we'll let you expand the roster from 53 to 56 because you'll need more. So that's three more jobs in the union per team, which means union dues as well.
Sounds to me like you're hammering all this out. I don't know if you're talking to Goodell or not. But
no, I ad-libbed that just off the top. Seriously, off the top of my head. Sure. That
roster expansion is interesting. That's something. Considering they've gone up in salary, the value of your 53rd man is considerably higher than it was a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
COVID and post-COVID, they added to the practice squad. I wouldn't be surprised if the NFLPA really doesn't like the current practice squad rules. Any running back signed after week one, which is when salaries become guaranteed, any running back signed after week one is signed to the practice squad. They're not signed
right.
to the active roster.
That's right.
Basically, they can use them up and down, which is really not what the practice squad is designed to do. I think that's kind of they're bending the spirit of something that does make sense. I believe in an expanded practice squad to an extent. There comes a point, though, that you've got to start rostering people, you know? Maybe that's something the league would budge on with this. Interesting to me would be how, once again, that bottom level would get behind it, but the veteran players aren't going to care. They're not going to want to play another game just so there could be three more guys mm-hmm. to compete to be, you know, the shield on special teams, however they do special teams now and in the future. We'll find out, I guess.
Sure.
That's interesting. I do think that is a part of the negotiation. I think that's going to have to come up at some point. Maybe you or somebody with a bit more NFL history behind them could weigh in. I when's the last time they changed the 53-man roster? I know that they've tweaked the game day roster a bunch in the last 10 years. I don't remember when the roster wasn't 53.
Right.
Maybe that is something they're interested in changing in the future. That's been set for quite a while, and the game has changed significantly just in the last 10, 15 years, let alone 30, which is what I'm suspecting it was. They cut the draft in half, and they kept it at 53. So I wonder how much the owners would really want to budge on that, but that could be something significant. Quick math off the top of my head, that's another 100 players in the league. The union would probably want something like that, I'd imagine. But that's an interesting thought.
Well, this is one where the players have all the leverage, and they have to realize it. Get everything you want, okay? Get everything you want, because the owners are the ones that need the 18th game. You don't.
I would go back to this. I think you could always call a CBA a cold war in some way. They're they're negotiating this every day. They're going to line up their priorities. They're going to, you know, there's actionable items that'll come out that they need to negotiate in real time, and the CBA spells out exactly how they do that. Not everything is short of ratifying a new CBA. There are add-ins to it. The permanence of those add-ins is always something that's going to be negotiated. And I think really what we're talking about here is the players probably did not expect their union to ratify the 17th game as easily as it did. The key members of the union, and it's not even fair to call them that, but the most recognizable members of the union, i.e. the highest paid players, were not in favor of that because they're taking it on without any benefit. I think the players are going to go after a little bit more revenue for that other game now, yep, along with some other things. In other words, they're going to want the league to pay a bit more to make up for what they didn't get the last time when they got, you know, shrewdly beaten by the owners again. They're going to need a little bit more. This is also going to be what do you want to say? It's a generation of more division. There's more argument. There's more discourse that exists in society. I'd imagine they're used to fighting for whatever it is that's going to come up. And we're talking, you know, it's a couple years yet down the line. The next wave of actual generational players is in high school. You know, they're seeing what's going on in the world. They're going to be aware of, I would think anyway, they're going to be more aware of these types of things and go into it with the idea that we have to fight for change. We have to do something about this. Whether they will, I mean, I guess we'll wait and see, because frankly, ownership has won pretty much all of these probably since 87. But yeah, we'll see how it all turns out. It's actionable. I'll say that. I think the players have certainly more reason this time. But I also think the league would be wise to recognize that you really didn't pay for the 17th game. You're going to have to pay at least one and a half for the 18th game now. I might be better off just, you know, giving it back to the players a little bit.
1993, I looked it up.
Three, wow, okay.
1993, 53-man roster with a couple of tweaks in there, here and there. My friend, always a pleasure. Only we can take the off season and turn it into a half-hour discussion.
It's absolutely true, and I appreciate it every week. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, my friend. Neil Coulong joining us on the show today. Always appreciate him very much. By the way, Tony Knopp on tomorrow's show. The segment The Suit Hates. That's why I wish we had him on every other day. What? Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Spring has sprung, and it's time to dust off those insurance policies. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 or visit our website at purdyinsurance.com to see what we can do for you.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Maybe that's what we should have done. We should have Brewers Outlet sponsor the Matt segment. What do you think? No?
He rants like a drunken man, but he's not really a drinker,
oh,
I don't think.
I didn't say that. What are you doing? But you do make a good point.
I'll see him before you do to take the flack.
The flack?
Yeah.
No. It'll be all good. This half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, my favorites, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. All right. So here we are. The decision on money. Look, first of all, the NCAA finally got to the wall and had no choice. And the conferences had no choice. And the reason it all came together had no choice is quite simple. The courts are telling them, you have no choice. So, if you want to go out and say this is the hill we're willing to figuratively die on, you would figuratively die on the hill, because they could have gone to trial. Any judgment would have been trebled, which is billions and billions. And guess what? Nobody would be able to pay. Nobody. And I think that's what it comes down to. Private equity is going to be something that is going to be looked into. I am going to see Pat Kraft tonight, by the way, so I'll talk to him a little bit tonight about a couple things. But private equity is something that needs to be looked into. It doesn't mean it's the be-all, end-all, and it doesn't mean it's the savior either. But it does need to be investigated to see what the possibilities are and how it could work before you make any decision on it.
It will destroy college football, and it will not take long.
But is the private equity, I know it's a professional example, did private equity destroy the Penguins, the Red Sox, or AC Milan?
It's a different deal. Look at what it did to the newspaper business. They'll sell the land under Beaver Stadium back to Penn State, and then make Penn State pay rent for it. And then when Penn State can't pay the rent on Beaver Stadium, there goes Beaver Stadium.
Sound like you have experience with this.
You go find the Reading Eagle newspaper building. Go find the Allentown newspaper building. The Pottstown newspaper building.
So you're saying private equity is a bad path?
Well, if they can figure out when have these, for lack of a better term, tech bros improved our lives lately? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's evidence after evidence. I mean, if they can control it, then so be it. I know they have, I get the reasons behind it. I get that they have to figure out a way to get this money, that they have to figure this out. But, you know, go back to the Red Lobster stuff from last week. You know, that's what they did to Red Lobster. They sold all the buildings back to, they sold all the property out from under Red Lobster and then forced them to pay rent, and Red Lobster couldn't pay the rent.
Yeah, somebody brought up Red Lobster the other day to me. I didn't really, in other words, I was sitting there listening to somebody else discuss it. I just happened to be sitting there at the time. So is Red Lobster out of business, or what are they?
It filed for bankruptcy. I don't think they closed a bunch of restaurants. I don't think they're technically completely out of business yet.
And that's because of private equity.
That's who bought them. That's who was running them for the past 4 or 5 years. I mean, it's just up and down the newspaper business of these firms have bought, you know, newspapers and newspaper chains and gutted them. Sold all the parts that made money, and you know, they're one-person news staffs that are working out of their homes, just, you know, trying to trying to still do the jobs because they love the jobs, not for the money at this point. And there's no, you know, it's just, I mean, the one that keeps sticking out into my head is the Pottstown Mercury.
Right. It's Thai Union. So in 2020, gaining 49% control of the chain, Red Lobster employees were assured that Thai Union would not interfere with their decisions. Thai Union will not be involved in Red Lobster's day-to-day operations, including supply chain standards and processes, according to a document. The document was entitled Seafood Supplier Talking Points. Okay. And this was approved by both Thai Union and Red Lobster executives. Okay. We intend to maintain relationships with all current seafood suppliers. By 2022, so this is 2 years later, representatives from Thai Union in Thailand, whose $4 billion empire includes brands like the Chicken of the Sea and John West Foods, were embedded in Red Lobster's Orlando headquarters, serving in top roles and closely directing the largest seafood restaurant chain in the world. Thai Union finance chief Ludwig Garnier said an analyst call in 2022, "We are much deeper involved in the management of Red Lobster." Now, to Todd's point, now Red Lobster has drowned in a relentless supply of Thai Union supplied shrimp. Red Lobster filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy Sunday, and it plans to sell its business to its lenders. In turn, Red Lobster will receive financing to stay afloat. Thai Union, their damaging decisions drove the pioneering chain's fall, according to 13 former Red Lobster executives and senior leaders in various areas of the business, as well as analysts. All but two of the former Red Lobster employees spoke under the condition of anonymity because of either non-disclosure agreements with Thai Union, fear that speaking out would harm their careers, or because they don't want to jeopardize deferred compensation from Red Lobster. Thai Union said earlier this year that they blame the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as sustained industry headwinds, higher interest rates, and rising material and labor costs for Red Lobster's struggles. Thai Union said it's been a supplier to Red Lobster for more than 30 years, and we intend for that relationship to continue. A bankruptcy process will allow Red Lobster to restructure its financial obligations and realize its long-term potential in a more favorable operating environment, the company said. Thai Union did not respond to questions, though, about specific allegations in the story. Former Red Lobster employees say that while the pandemic, inflation, and rent costs did impact Red Lobster, Thai Union's ineptitude was a pivotal factor in their decline. Les Foreman said, he's a West Coast Division Vice President, worked at Red Lobster for 20 years and was fired in 2022. He said, quote, "It was miserable working there for the past year and a half. They didn't have any idea about running a restaurant company in the United States." Shocking. So does this match up with what you know about private equity?
Pretty much. And, you know, I think Adam made the point, you know, if somebody's going to pay a bunch of money, you know, into the NIL thing, you know, and they sign contracts with these people, are they going to expect to say on who's to play? Let's say their son's on the team.
Yeah. Well, as Joe Paterno always said, he was correct. He says, "I want your dollars, not your 2 cents."
I bet there's a long list of high school coaches that would love to say that to people.
I know. look, that's the other part. Maybe under NCAA rules, you cap private equity at 20%. I mean, Red Lobster was 49%. That's too close to the line. Right?
Yeah, and, you know, it's... they're going to have to come up with something. I'm not a big fan of this one, but, you know, you're going to have to do what you got to do as well.
Okay. So there are a couple things. Number one, you do have to investigate private equity, and you have to, because you have to see. And see what the possibilities are. Don't get too enamored with gigantic numbers. You go, oh, we got it made. We're good. No. Be reasonable about it, because the one thing you cannot do is you cannot cede control. Which in this case, at Red Lobster, it sounded like they ceded control. And the when you're sitting there and you can cap it, let me give you an example. Tepper, was it David Tepper? It's the owner of the Carolina Panthers?
Yes.
Okay. He was a minority owner of the Steelers. I believe the Rooneys, if I'm correct, I believe the Rooney family, people think they're, well, a lot of, for years, they thought, hey, they're 100% owners. No. I think they own about 33 or 34% of the team. Right? And there are a bunch of them in there that have percentages. Tepper was one of them, which is one of the reasons why he ended up getting Carolina, even though he did not have the highest bid. They knew who he was, and they knew who he was with. And because of that, it opened the door for him to get it, because they knew who they were dealing with. It's interesting how, again, number one, look at private equity, but I'd also look at sponsorship on jersey sponsorship as well, because I think that can benefit to the tune of $10 to $15 million a year if done correctly. Then go with private equity as another possibility, but I think you have to internally cap the private equity number. I mean, according to Redbird, Jerry Cardinale, he says that, you know, they gave him an example, and he said, and the example he was given was Michigan. And he said, Michigan is about $1 billion. That's what he said. And I'm just telling you what he said. He said, there are 5 to 10 we would want to get involved with. No offense, I think Penn State would be one of them he would look into. Because, again, who's number 6 in total TV viewership from 2016 to 2023? Penn State. Who's among the 18 schools that make up 50% of the TV ratings? Penn State.
Let's be honest, they'd want a shot at that alumni base, too.
Sure they would. But you would have to craft this in such a way where, yes, do they have to get something out of it, the private equity firm? Of course they would. They would have to get something out of it. But at the same time, what you get out of it is the money and maintaining control. And the idea is, make sure you negotiate with multiple private equity firms. That way, when it's done, and say there is a problem, and you need an out in the contract, you've got other people you can turn to and say, remember last time we talked, we need to talk again. That's me.
Maybe they give you the lump sum and you kind of pay them back through those uniform advertisements and a little bit of the TV money.
Could be. You know, make it a multi-year deal, whatever it may be. But you're at a point now where monetarily you're forced into something that's forcing for certain programs, a level of survival. A Penn State can handle it, but having that backup of extra cash is huge. But can Indiana handle it? Can Rutgers handle it? Can Maryland handle it? I mean, I have a list here. I haven't even gone to other conferences yet. Can Kansas State handle it? I mean, I'm talking about the 20 to 22 million. Who can handle it? I mean, you have to ask it. Now, let's look at Washington. I'm not going to look at Oregon for the moment, because Oregon, if they went with private equity, they have Nike behind them, okay? Right? So let's talk about Washington for a moment, or even UCLA. Can they handle it? UCLA is $104 million in athletic debt. Can they handle it? The 20 to 22 million in annual fees to players? Can they handle it?
I'm guessing the ones that can handle it are outnumber by a lot the ones that actually can, which is going to be a problem as well.
Oh, the ones, yeah, you're saying the ones that can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and that's a big issue. And there's also going to be, in the settlement, 40% of the money they're going to have. Okay. In the settlement, the NCAA picks up X amount. The rest of it's going to be split 60% among the power conferences and 40% by everybody else. Can Bucknell actually survive having a reduced number from the NCAA?
So, you know, we do have those numbers wrong. 40% is coming from the power conferences. 60% is coming out of the pockets of the rest of the conferences.
Okay. Well,
that we talked about that last week, and then I read a story the next day, and we didn't get back into it. I made sure to copy it and put it in. It's 60% is proposed to come out of the pockets of the programs in those 22 non-FBS leagues, with 40% coming from the power conferences.
All right.
Those 22 leagues would like to see those percentages pretty much flipped.
Right.
And when we did the math, when they are flipped, it is fair.
Right. Because if you're Bucknell and you're getting a reduced number from the NCAA, because, I mean, it wouldn't be that they have to pay.
No.
They're just going to get a reduced number from the NCAA. What does that do for their other sports?
I mean, it's not something I looked into, but I can't imagine. I'm not sure football's a moneymaker for them.
Oh, no, football's not a moneymaker.
It can't be.
No. Football is, anybody in the FCS level does not make a dime from football. Nobody in the FCS does.
Well, then they're making their money off of basketball, and that's where they're reducing the money from.
Right, exactly.
Hmm.
It is that to me is the perilous part of all this. Which sports end up surviving this? I don't want to see anything cut.
No.
And I thought COVID would lead to cutting, okay? So remember that. I thought COVID would lead to some cutting in sports. It didn't. But now we're dealing in numbers that a year ago people did not anticipate. How about that? Yeah, that sums it up. That big sigh there.
Yes.
Big numbers. And when it comes to private equity, Todd will tell you in the newspaper business, it helped destroy it. Fair?
Fair.
We have Tony Knopp tomorrow. We're going to talk about private equity with him. All right? We're going to talk to about private equity with him tomorrow and get into that with him and what he's hearing out there. Because look, USC is a private institution, and he's very well connected at USC. They look at private equity in a heartbeat. All right. This half hour has been brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn what they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.